and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This week we are happy but somewhat, a poignant moment where we're interviewing our departing executive director, Ms. Carol Oldham. How are you doing, Carol?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very well, very well. Carol Oldham has been the executive director of MCAN since early 2014, and I can personally attest to the fact that she has brought the organization into flower, where it is now vibrant and impactful climate organization here in Massachusetts. But the worm always turns. There's the next turn of the screw. Carol, for I think under happy circumstances, will be leaving us. And I wanted to take the opportunity to kind of debrief and to find out, Carol, what have we learned? What's MCAN been up to in your tenure? What do you see as the successes? What should we as a movement, because you have seen so many things, I mean, what should we be thinking about and moving towards?
Yeah, great question. So I would say, I think one of the things that I've really loved about being at MCAN is our solutions orientation. We're very focused on sort of making the good stuff happen. And, you know, there are lots of great groups in Massachusetts and across the nation that are working on getting us off of fossil fuels, but we're working on getting clean energy happening and getting better buildings built and that kind of thing. And I actually think that this is a great moment for that pivot. And because I think that there are a lot of folks who are realizing that what's been happening isn't working. You know, this is something that we at MCAN have been saying for a little while, that like this system that we have right now it might feel like it's working, but it's not working. And I think
you mean the system writ large with a capital S.
Exactly. This, you know, sort of corporate capitalist system that we all live inside of, right?
This neoliberal universe we all swim in, right?
Yeah. And I think one of the really interesting things too is that there's been this growing realization over the last couple of years that of the deep, deep links between racism and climate change. And that has really come to the forefront in the last, you know, just couple of months. So it started out with the impacts, the realization that there were outsized impacts to communities of color, to Black and Brown people from COVID. And, you know, and then, okay, well, why could that be? Well, it's because their air quality sucks in their communities, right? And so, wow, guess what else that air quality is doing? It's causing climate change, right? And then, you know, there's been this wonderful, amazing uprising from folks. I think, you know, a lot of it has been, is not just, you know, as a result of some of the horrible brutality that we've seen, on Black people and Black communities over the last several weeks, but also just this realization that, you know, it's really, it's not fair what we're doing. And it's not just not fair to us, it's mostly not fair to the people who are already suffering the impacts. So I think that coming together is really inspiring.
I think it's, and I agree with you, I think that has been, and I would say this personally, right? I mean, that the evolution over the years from the Keystone XL stuff, right, where all of a sudden you see the indigenous tribes getting literally the snot knocked out of them so they can put a pipeline in there. And all of a sudden you begin to see these connections. And in the last, you know, couple months, it has sort of blossomed into this like crystalline clarity thing. You say, oh my God, these things are so clearly connected. And I think, the responsibility of people who have taken on the climate fight in quotation marks. Well, I mean, people of privilege who've taken it on have to recognize right. that, you know, there's a lot going on here that, that hasn't been thought of. I mean, I know, again, personally, I start off thinking about wind turbines and, you know, CO2 molecules, right? Yeah. Everyone's on this trajectory, and you keep – that's what's a fascinating thing, to keep learning as the movement evolves.
Yeah. And I think one of the things, right, there's that realization where you're like, oh, it's not just replacing – coal plants with wind turbines. It's not just changing where we get our electricity from. It's changing our lives. So that, and I think also just, you know, being at home for several months me has made me really have this realization, you know, we were working on buildings long before this, but like, oh, right. Your building that you live in really matters,
right.
And really affects your quality of life. And so, like, we were, and again, we were already working on affordable housing, but all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, we need to ramp that up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's really, been a tumultuous time recently, but as like yourself, you see the threads of where, how things, the wave has sort of come together. And I think that it is, I mean, I guess in some ways it speaks to the fundamental shifts in how we live our lives that would be required to have a sustainable planet, right?
Yeah.
Is that if you're talking about 200 or 300 years from now, how are people going to be living? Well, there are real impactful things, and we better get started on them now. So tell me, what, in terms of the MCAN, tell me – please describe MCAN from your vantage point, your unique vantage point. I mean, MCAN is a bunch of grassroots organizers. I mean, do you think that they're on the right path? Are they doing the right things? What?
Yeah. I mean, I actually, this is another thing that I felt really strongly about over the last couple of months, is that grassroots organizing is, it's clearer than ever to me that that is the answer. Because I think that that grassroots organizing, whether you're organizing on, you know, a particular issue, like climate change or something more broad, the process of building democracy, of getting involved in your community, of connecting to your neighbors, of bringing folks who don't usually sit at the table and make decisions to the table, right? Like, this makes everybody's lives better. And the best grassroots organizing includes everyone and goes from, you know, maybe something like, let's put some solar on our capped landfill, to let's make sure that everybody is able to live a fulfilling life. Right. Like, I've been thinking a lot about this idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And, you know, like, if you think about a worst case climate scenario, there is no pursuit of happiness under that. And so community organizing to me is about giving everybody the equal chance for the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is like, I don't know. I'm feeling, and, you know, everything is very sentimental, during this pandemic and everything, but I just feel like that is the big calling.
Well, I mean, the American, the founding documents, I remember taking a course in college about what was called the American Civil Religion, right? And the Declaration of Independence. I mean, these things are almost religious, that are inspiring and noble, right? And it's how we, and so a reaffirmation, a reawakening that our job is to have a more perfect union for the common welfare and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as you define it, not in terms of, you know, having a big paycheck, right? But I mean, how do you live a happy life? Right?
Yeah.
And that's, I agree with you, is that as you bring people into a grassroots community recognition of the commonality, only good things flow from that, right? And that's and that's been MCAN's hallmark. I think many I've seen several groups that have gone from very narrow initial rationales for being into more and more holistic kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that becomes right? That becomes your purpose once you start the work is, oh, right, I need to, my focus is to make my community better. And you start thinking about, like, is my community my neighborhood? Is my community my town?
Right.
Is my community my commonwealth? Is my community my world, right? And we're all so connected. And I just think, you know, like you were saying, that grassroots organizing is how we get there. And I think, too, that this is something that the pandemic and quarantining and whatever has shown us, right? We need connection. And we can't, you know, I mean, God knows at the end of the day, I am so tired of Zoom calls and everything, but like, I will totally get on a Zoom call with my friends for a drink.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah,
and that is like,
I mean, I've seen my siblings more, on Zoom in the last 2 months than I have in the last 4 years, right? Because you're forced to, but it's a nice feeling, right? To be able to connect with people, even, absolutely. Tell me about, you know, what do you see in the State House? What has MCAN's, efforts in the State House? I mean, how has that gone? What do you, I know there are successes, there are always inevitable failures, but I mean, there's sort of, I guess I'm intrigued by the two sides that the easy building code is in one sense a grand scheme, but then the nuts and bolts, you go into the sort of nitty gritty stuff in the basement of a building in, I don't know, God knows where, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple things that have sort of come into focus for me over the last, I mean, I guess during this last session. And one of them is that, you know, I think the governor sort of talks a good game on climate, but is not even communicating that it's a priority inside his administration, aside from folks who already believe that it is, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is something, you know, on the building code stuff, the folks who are at the Board of Building Regulations and Standards or Housing and Economic Development, they're not getting a clear message from the governor that this is a priority. And, you know, they're not hearing that, like, oh my God, we got to start building our buildings all electric and efficient, or we're never going to reach our goals. And they have to hear that. And I've become, I would say, over this last session, I've become a little bit obsessed with accountability, you know, which again is part of grassroots organizing, right? It's a key piece. It's like we as a community hold each other accountable. And I think that that kind of visibility and accountability is just a really important part. You know, this is, we've been talking a lot with the staff at MCAN about our various campaigns and sort of thinking about, like, how do we provide the accountability that all of your listeners, right? All of those of you in the communities, you want accountability. How do we let you know we're all so busy? How do we let you know in a way that's digestible and that you can do something with what's happening? Mm-hmm. And so, so I think, you know, like, I'm really excited about some of the methods that folks are thinking about to hold folks accountable. And I think that, that, you know, kind of providing that visibility is really key. And I think it, you know, there's this assumption of invisibility on a lot of folks' parts, you know, that if it's, that, you know, the Board of Building Regulations and Standards, not to sound like I'm obsessed with them or anything, but they, but I am. No, they think what they do is invisible. And so when we say, you know, when there's a news story about what they're doing on building codes, they don't know what to think about it,
really?
Because, or when we've got, you know, 100 people at one of their hearings to say, hey, wait a minute, I'm here watching and you need to do this thing that we're asking you to do. You know, they're just, it's just such a key part of grassroots organizing. You know, it's not just education. It's not just asking. It's if you don't get what you want, you have to hold the folks in power accountable to that. And we have to be accountable to each other.
Well, it's interesting you say that the 100 people in the hearing. I mean, I think that that then rewinds back to the whole sort of environmental justice where you say, okay, at least yes. have the hearing in the language of the people that are going to be affected, right? That yes. that's just this fundamental thing if you expect interesting.
Yeah, and of course the underlying assumption, and again, this is people need to be held accountable to this. The fact is that if you're holding your hearings in a Spanish-speaking neighborhood and you don't have a translator, then you don't want to include people who for whom Spanish is a first language, right? Like this is something, right, that we're starting to recognize about, like, that it's not enough to not be racist. You have to be anti-racist,
right?
It's the same thing. Like, you can't just be like, well, we didn't use any, you know, big words, big complicated words that, you know, that people who have a, you know, primary English background would, you know, you've got to go the extra mile. We have to hold folks accountable when they don't. And even if they're our friends, right? Like, we have to hold each other accountable and hold each other to the standard that we are trying to achieve.
Right. So it's the sort of, you know, personal, in a sense, personal growth that you are accountable for the things you say you're going to before you can expect someone else. I mean, it just, this stuff goes into so many different kind. You can let it, or I think you're better to absorb all these things on the personal and the global and the local level. I mean, it's all,
yeah,
all one. Is the,
and it takes time, right? Like, it takes time to absorb it. It takes time to process it. I mean, I think about the fact that, like, the board anti-racism training that we did like a year and a half ago, like, I'm so glad that we did it that long ago because, you know, otherwise there wouldn't have been plenty of time to start thinking really deeply about it and to have processed it and to, you know, to be ready for this moment. Yeah. Like, we as an organization are ready for this moment because we thought ahead a little bit.
Right. The, I guess, I mean, Carol, you're coming to the close of your tenure. Again, if you have any parting words or anything that you want to tell the people listening, I'm sure if they were here, they would say how much they appreciate everything that you've been doing.
I mean, I would say my parting words of wisdom, I mean, and you've heard this before, but would be, you guys are all so lucky to have Sarah to work with, who's my successor. Mm-hmm. Like, she has so many wonderful skills that are really going to help MCAN. You know, you said sort of, we've been brought to flower. Well, now it's time to bear fruit, right? And she has those skills to get it there because, you know, I mean, I think one of the things that she and I have been working together for the last couple of weeks and sort of the handoff and, you know, it's a very complex organization because we have 60 chapters and mm-hmm. each one of them is different and some of them represent multiple towns and, you know, all that kind of thing. And she has training as a social worker. So she has this ability to listen and process with folks and acknowledge the emotion. And right now, everybody, you know, like we were saying earlier, everybody's so emotional because there is good change happening. And she has the ability to walk through that with people, which I think is just fabulous. And so I'm really excited for this to be a moment to hand it off to somebody who can, take it further and, do more better with all of your listeners, with all of our chapters, you know, new board members. It's just really exciting.
Well, Carol, let me, for my part, express my, as someone who has followed your career, for all the time, let me express my own deep admiration, respect, and gratitude for your leadership, your poise, your grace, your ability to bring people together. It has been a great boon to MCAN, and it is It's been a joy to work with you over the years, and it's so happy to have this chance to talk to you, capture you one more time on tape here, and thank you very much for everything you've done.
Thank you, and thank you for all your service on the board and for doing the podcast.
That's good. Well, I just in case anyone doesn't know, they can send to me an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net if they want to make a comment. And you should know it was that Carol that made that email and gave it to me three times before I finally found it. And many, but you can send a podcast, you send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can find us on all the modern podcast distribution apps. Let me close where we always close. If I can find my notes that I've been saying for the last 10 years. Let's see. We'll close where we always close. That saying, we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of those things, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next 10 years under a just and equitable plan. And that just and equitable plan rings louder and louder as we progress here. But that plan has to use regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So again, Carol, thank you so much for all of your service and your time and for taking out of your busy last few days to chat with us here, okay?
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.
Very cool.